The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter number 10, text number 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on March 24th, 2010, in Radadesh, Belgium.
So today is the most auspicious appearance day of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Ramachandra. So we are reading from the 9th canto, chapter number 10, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, beginning with text number 2. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tas yapa bhagavan esha sakshad brahma mayo hari ankshang shena chatur dhagat Putratvang Pratitasarai Rama Lakshmana Bharata Shatrughna iti Sangyaya Tasyapi Bhagavanesha Sakshad Brahma Mayohari Angshang Shena Chatur Dhagat Putratvang Pratitasarai Rama Lakshmana Bharata Shatrughna Iti Sangyaya. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasharath. Purport. Lord Ramachandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms, Advaitam Achyuttamanadam Ananta Rupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 539, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtam. The Lord is situated in many forms such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, and these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead, and they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramachandra, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, who being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasarath in response to prayers by the demigods.
Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagrjata Sagana Raghunathan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadvaita Savadvuta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, if the demigods are the supreme, as many people claim they are, then why do they have to pray for Lord Ram to come? Demigods know they are not the supreme. And it is confirmed also in the Rig Veda. Om tad Vishnu paramang param sarapas yanti sarayo deviya chakshiratatam. The devotees, they are looking to the Vishnu Loka, the supreme above. So, we should not be fooled by this false propaganda that all the gods are one and the same. If the gods themselves do not subscribe to this philosophy, why should we? Rather, we should take the authoritative version of the great acharyas, Mahajano Yeno Gutasa Pantha. The mental speculators, they have their marg also. That marg will not take us to the place we need to go. Hanuman could jump. The other monkeys couldn't. You see. The bhakta, he can understand the absolute truth. Because he is empowered by Krishna to understand the absolute truth. Hanuman can jump the ocean, but the mental speculators, you see, the monkeys, they're like the mental speculators. They cannot jump. What is that Bengali poetry? Baro baro bando leo, baro baro peit, lanka dinkate, matakare he. Big, big monkey, big, big belly, Ceylon jumping, melancholy. The big fat monkey with a big belly, he could not jump. So these speculators, they have big, big, fat, belly, speculative brains that cannot jump to the transcendental dimension. They say all the gods are the same. Actually, that's atheism, isn't it? If all the gods for the supreme, which they say, then there is no supreme God. How many supreme courts do you have here in Belgium? How many supreme courts? Only one supreme court. If there's more than one supreme court, it is not supreme court. Supreme court means one without a second. So, supreme being means one without a second. You cannot have many, many supreme beings, but they say, wait a minute, but you got four of them here. This is contradictory. You Hare Krishna people, you say there's only one supreme, but now you're listing four of them. How is that? Actually, there's only one supreme personality of God. But he manifests himself in an unlimited number of forms. For what purpose? to expand his own enjoyment. That's all. It's really quite amazing. I mean, if you think about it. I mean, the jivas are expanded. Why Krishna does that, I don't know, but he does it. That's a fact. He expands himself as Vishnu tattva and also as jiva tattva. And then there's also Shiva tattva. This is the inconceivable pastimes of Krishna. Why does he do? Sometimes people say, why does Krishna wear a peacock feather in his hair? Reminds me of one Indian gentleman who came to our temple in Gainesville. He went to Chicago to the Ratha Yatra. He got the darshan with Prabhupada. And he said, why Krishna did not appear in Russia? Prabhupada sarcastically answered, because he did not take your consultation. So, Krishna doesn't have to answer to us to satisfy us. Well, give me a good reason for wearing a peacock feather in your hair, and then I'll allow you to do it. No, he doesn't have to take our consultation. Everything that Krishna does is simply his pleasure pastime. He's not obliged to cater to our tiny, you know, brains. That he has to, everything he does has to be comprehensible to our teeny, weeny little brain. He's not obliged to do that. Simply, he acts for his own pleasure. That is Krishna, that is God. So he can appear as Krishna and enjoy other men's wives, or he can appear as Ram and be faithful to his one wife. So faithful to that one wife, you see. So some people say, well, Ram is very good because he sets example for us. But Krishna, he is very bad. He doesn't set a good example for us. But wait a minute, why does God, is God obliged to set an example for you? Who are you to tell God that he has to set an example for you? You see? Everybody wants to play God over God. This is the difficulty. You cannot play God over God. Then you're trying to be God yourself. You're trying to kick him out and take his position. It doesn't work. We tried it, and here we are. Caught up in the repetition of birth and death. You see? Krishna says, you want to try being me? Well, all right. Prabhupada gives a very nice example, very lucid example. That little girl, she was looking out the window. She saw that beautiful moon in the sky. Mommy, mommy, give me that moon, you see. Now can the mother give the child the moon? Is that possible? The mother can give the child the moon? There's no mother that powerful to give the child the moon. But she wants to pacify her little daughter, so she takes a mirror and she puts it in the child's hand in such a way that the moon is in the mirror, and the child is feeling so happy. Oh, mommy has given me the moon. Now I have the moon. You see? So we're all like that little girl, you know. We wanted to have the moon. We wanted to be God. And we can't be God, but we can have the illusion that we are God. And here we are with our little mirrors, you know. But I really do have the moon in my hand. And you don't. I've got the moon in my hand. You don't have it in your hand. Ha 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 ha. That's the material mentality, is it? I'm the center of existence, not you. Well, this time we wake up, you know, and realize I don't really have the moon in my hand. I'm not really the center of existence. What pleases me is not necessarily the standard of what is proper and what is improper. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yovidati kamam. There is one Supreme Eternal amongst the plural Eternals. There is one single conscious being amongst the plural conscious beings. And what is the difference? He feeds everybody. Eko bahunam yodavati kama. Could you feed everybody? We struggle just to feed ourselves in this modern day economy and our family members. But to speak of feeding the whole, all living entities, it's madness. And they think they are God. What sort of idiocy is that? It's absolutely asinine, that consciousness. So, we have to understand that Krishna had these amazing pastimes. Actually, he is displaying them in this world for our benefit. To attract us back to that place where time is conspicuous by its absence. That's hard to conceive of, you know, a place where there's no time. Just imagine you go to a place and there was no past. That means when you arrive there, there was no time when you were not there. You ever wonder why you can become Nichabhata and then you can become Nichasiddha? You go to that place and there's no past. That means you were always there. Therefore, the Nityabhada, if he can somehow get back to that eternal dimension, he becomes Nityasiddha because there's no past there. You may say, but wait a minute, that's not logical. Well, when you fly from Auckland to Los Angeles, it is also not very logical that you can leave Auckland at 11 o'clock at night on Friday and you can arrive the same day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Is that logical? You can arrive, you can write it down in your little diary, you know, 11 o'clock, took off from Auckland. And then you go back in the diary till, 1 p.m., which is 10 hours earlier, arrived in Los Angeles, 10 hours before I left from Auckland. Wait a minute. Is that logical? No. Crossing the international date line does very illogical things to time. So just imagine when you cross the Virajar River. If the little insignificant international date line concocted by somebody somewhere in this material world can do such an amazing things to your sense of time, just imagine what the Virajar River can do when you cross the Virajar River. This is the creation of the Lord. So anyway, this is inconceivable stuff here, the pastimes of Krishna, how he's manifesting them here in this material existence, simply to attract us back to him. This is a wonderful mercy. Actually, we even see such things in the material existence. One time I was, I forget why I was there, but I was there in the Houston, Texas airport. And off in the distance you could hear these, what's this doing in the airport? You hear this music going on. It was live music. It wasn't piped in, some actually live music going on. Da, 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 some ukuleles, you know. Da, 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 da. You looked over, there were some girls in grass skirts doing the hula dance, you know. What's going on here in the airport? Some guys with ukuleles, with flower garlands. They call them leis there in Hawaii. But they were all adorned with flowers and ukuleles and the girls in the grass skirts with flowers in their hair. What's going on here in the Houston airport? Jai Krishna. And then I looked over, it was Hawaiian Airlines, and it all made sense. You click, oh yeah, Hawaiian Airlines, they're doing a promotion to try to lure people to buy tickets to Hawaii. Well, the same thing's going on here, you see. These pastimes of the Lord, either as Lord Ram or as Lord Krishna, or as any of the multifarious incarnations, is to show us these amazing, wonderful qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're attracted to associate with Him, and we want to go to that place where He resides eternally. And another aspect of these amazing pastimes, as shown by Bilva Mangala Thakur, when he was spending hundreds of years living in Vrindavan, it's explained, and I've read recently in Prabhupada's writings, that actually he wasn't just meditating on Krishna's pastimes, he was actually entering into them and participating in them. While he had his body sitting there in Vrindavan, he was actually entering into the pastimes of Krishna and participating in those pastimes. So this Leela Smaranam, it's pretty potent stuff. If you go deep enough into Leela Smaranam and completely purify your heart of all that lust, that anger, that greed, and that madness, that illusion, and the worst one of them all, envy. If you can just go, really take this process of sadhana bhakti seriously, 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 and go deep, 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 deep into Leela Smaranam, you can actually enter into those pastimes even while you have a body here still sitting in Belgium. So, we shouldn't think this is just some ordinary books. These books are actually the gateway into actually being a participant in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It simply depends on the quality of our hearing. Am I taking it as some entertaining story, or am I taking it as Krishna's manifestation, that these pastimes are actually fully present in their vibrations, which in fact they are. These pastimes are actually fully present in the sound vibration of these pastimes. The sound vibration of the pastime and the pastime itself are completely, totally non-different. So if we can go deep, deep, deep into hearing, some people say, what do you mean deep? What do you mean being absorbed in the name or in the pastime? What does that mean? It's actually very simple. Many of us, before we joined this movement, we used to go to the cinema. And we would get very absorbed in watching a movie. Everybody knows what it means to be, those of us who, everyone who's had that experience of getting absorbed in a movie knows what it means to be absorbed in meditation on something. You could be sitting there in North Dakota, a hellish sub-zero freezing night, sub-zero Fahrenheit, which is even colder than sub-zero centigrade. A sub-zero freezing night in North Dakota, watching the Blue Lagoon, about the Fiji Islands movie. And you get so absorbed in it, you forget about the blizzard going on outside. Until finally it ends, the credits are on the screen, and you got to head out again into the ice and snow and somehow, make your way through the blizzard back to home. But you're so absorbed in the movie, you forgot you were there in North Dakota. You actually thought you were there in the South Sea Islands. So, in this way, we have to go deeply, deeply, deeply into chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Go deeply into hearing the pastimes of Lord Ram, the pastimes of Lord Krishna, the pastimes of that most merciful of all Lords, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in this way, those pastimes will become so real that when we lay the book down and we look what's happening in the material world, we go, what? What is this nonsense going on around here? We'll understand the real life is here in these pastimes of the Lord. This is the actual life. And Prabhupada is so merciful, he's so potent, that he has actually escorted us, he has ushered us in to being participants in Gaura Lila. His Sankirtan, his ISKCON movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is actually a manifestation of Chaitanya's Lila. The Hare Krishna movement is the Chaitanya Lila. So Prabhupada, by giving us this wonderful ISKCON, has actually brought us in as participants in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So that means even if you just meditate on doing, you just totally meditate on your service, whatever it is, management, cooking, cleaning, book distribution, raising a family in Krishna consciousness, studying the books, whatever it may be. If you will just deeply absorb yourself in doing your service in a first-class way, actually, that is non-different from Lila Smarana. So what could be a more exciting life than directly associated with God in his most inconceivably nectarian pastime of flooding this planet in a tidal wave of Krishna prema? That is predicted. I'm just not forgetting the verse in the Bengali. But Krishna Das Kaviraj is explaining that this Krishna consciousness movement, it is a tidal wave of nectar, tidal wave of bliss. And it is inundating the entire universe, drowning everyone, whether they are lame, invalid, or blind. So we have been engaged by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada in participating in this inundation of the entire universe with this tidal wave of Krishna's mercy. What could be a more exciting, enlivening, thrilling life than this? The supreme fun, the ultimate adventure. We have a simple program in our Hare Krishna movement. Realize who you are and revolutionize the universe. That's all. Simple program. Realize who you are and revolutionize the universe. Prabhupada has placed us on the cutting edge of world history, at the vanguard of the greatest paradigm shift in the history of the modern age. That's where he has placed us, by engaging us in assisting him. So we're very thankful to His Divine Grace for so kindly bestowing this mercy upon us. So now we'll look at the, we'll study a little further, next verse. Tasyanu charitam rajan shibish tattva darshibi shrutang hi vanitang buri tvayasita pateramuhu. O King Parikshit, the transcendental activities of Lord Ramachandra have been described by great saintly persons who have seen the truth. Because you have heard again and again about Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Mother Sita, I shall describe these activities only in brief. Please listen. Purport. Modern Rakshasas, posing as educationally advanced merely because they have doctorates, have tried to prove that Lord Ramachandra is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but an ordinary person. But those who are learned and spiritually advanced will never accept such notions. They will accept the descriptions of Lord Ramachandra and his activities only as presented by tattva-darshis, those who know the Absolute Truth. In Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advises, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva-darshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Unless one is tattva-darshi, in complete knowledge of the absolute truth, one cannot describe the activities of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, although there are many so-called Ramayanas, or histories of Lord Ramachandra's activities, some of them are not actually authoritative. Sometimes Lord Ramachandra's activities are described in terms of one's own imaginations, speculations, or material sentiments. But the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra should not be handled as something imaginary. While describing the history of Lord Ramachandra, Shukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Parikshit, "You have already heard about the activities of Lord Ramachandra. Apparently, therefore, 5,000 years ago, there were many Ramayans, or histories of Lord Ramachandra's activities, and there are many still. But we must select only those books written by tattva-darshis, jnaninas tattva-darshinah, not the books of so-called scholars who claim knowledge only on the basis of a doctorate." This is a warning by Shukadeva Goswami, "Rishibish tattva-darshibi." Although the Ramayana composed by Valmiki is a huge literature, the same activities are summarized here by Shukadeva Goswami in a few verses. It's like there's that Tulsi Das Ramayana. Prabhupada said it's tinged by Mayavad. So we are not interested in reading something tinged by Mayavad. It's like I may give you a wonderful, wonderful cup of sweet rice. Prabhu, this is the ultimate sweet rice. Then you find there's some sand mixed in with it, you see. Who wants such sweet rice with sand mixed, you see? So we should take the pure unadulterated Ramayan, Valmika Ramayan, and the Shukadev condensed version here. You see, this is bona fide. We must hear from the tattva darshis, those who have seen the truth, those who know the absolute truth. This is such an important principle. Not these so-called academics. Of course, we can create our own academics, who are tattva-darshi academics. That is very good. But not these rascal academics who they are tattva-adarshi. They do not see the truth. We are not interested in these so-called academics. I was taking one time a Sanskrit course at the university, and the teaching assistant, the TA we called him, he was saying, yeah, all these, he was saying how these Vedic literature is mythology. He said, there must be mythology because there's such amazing things in them. It must be mythological. But is that, what is that? He's putting blind faith because somebody told him their mythology. He's blindly accepting its mythology. Is he being a true intellectual? To blindly accept that it's mythology? You see, someone who's actually intelligent, a true intellectual person, he won't blindly accept or blindly reject anything. He will take everything on the basis of clear analysis. So just because you don't see something in the present world, does that mean it never existed? What kind of chauvinism is that? Because we don't see it, therefore it doesn't exist. That's the position of the modern day academics. Because we don't see it, it doesn't exist. Well, how much can you see with your limited eyes, Dr. Frog? My well is the biggest body of water in the whole universe. Ribbit. Ribbit. Well, little Freddy Frog, I mean, he went hopping one day and he hopped over to the Atlantic Ocean. He was a student of Dr. Frog. Dr. Frog always said, "My well is the biggest body of water in the whole universe." So one day, little Freddy Frog, he went hopping along. Hop along, Freddy. And he came to the Atlantic Ocean. He went, "My God, this is huge. Dr. Frog's well is nothing compared to this ocean, Atlantic Ocean." He got so excited, he wanted to share the wonderful news with Dr. Frog. He did a 180-degree turn. He started hopping back to Dr. Frog's well, hopping along, little Freddy, hopping. Just wait, Dr. Frog's going to be so happy to hear this new scientific discovery, the Atlantic Ocean. Well, Dr. Frog was anything but pleased. Dr. Frog, there's a body of water much bigger than your well. Great news, Dr. Frog. What do you mean? Bigger than my well. That's preposterous. There could be no body of water bigger than my well. No, Dr. Frog, it's much bigger than your well. Come, I'll show it to you. It's much bigger. Bigger than my well. Well, is this much bigger than my well? No, Dr. Frog, it's much bigger than that. Is this much bigger? In this way, you know the story. That speculator, just like he expanded his brain through speculation, he expanded his belly through speculation so much that, finished. He dropped dead and he died in his well. You see. So these Dr. Frogs, they're very proud, you see, that we don't see somebody with 16,108 queens. That's not possible. With 16,108 palaces, mythology. Dr. Frog. So, if they want to go on with their Dr. Frog's business, that's their business. And if they want to dupe all the little Freddies to become their students, that's the Freddies' business, you see. But we are not interested in such so-called academia. We are interested in the actual truth. We want to know, who am I? What is the source of my existence? Why do I exist? You see, this we want to know. Where have I come from? Why do I exist? How can I perfect my existence? You see, these questions they do not answer. I remember my college days, my freshman year. I simply wanted to know, what is the meaning of existence? That was my one question. And even though there were so many classes, even we had one course, which in some ways was a very nice idea. It was an interdepartmental course where you'd have many different professors coming in, somebody from the history department, some from the archaeology department, somebody from the drama department, somebody from the English department, studying the whole history of Western civilization. Of course, the initials were BS, Basic Studies, and we all had a good laugh over that, BS 101, BS 102. That's another matter. But anyway, even though we were getting all this, we were being fed all of this BS or basic studies of the history of the Western civilization, they never told us why we existed. Not one of these great philosophers we studied. You see, we studied the Greek philosophers, we studied the Roman philosophers, the Stoics, the Stoics were there, then I forget the other ones, Marcus Aurelius, he was another school of, so many different, you know. Then we went on to the European philosophers, Descartes, Heidegger, so many big names, all the so-called big names. But what light did they shine in the darkness of ignorance? Not one light. There was not one light from any one of these great thinkers that made any sense, that showed the way out of the chaos of material existence. There wasn't even one of these great, so-called great thinkers which showed any light at all, the way out of the dark cave of material existence. Only Socrates and Plato had a little something to show. Socrates, Prabhupada said he was the only philosopher in the world. He was constantly challenging the philosophical absurdities of the Greek society, the Greek culture, so much so that the Greek authorities couldn't tolerate it anymore. He was disturbing the minds of the youth and creating a rebellious attitude. He was creating a counterculture among the Greek youth, and they couldn't stand that, so they said, "Here, drink this poison." And he said, "Tell me," he said, "Well, Socrates, drink this poison. But first, tell us how you would like to be buried." He said, "Well, you're going to have to catch me first." You knew he wasn't his body, you see. So he had some understanding. But then, and Plato carried on with the vision of Socrates, but Aristotle, he took a long term. He took a left turn and went into empiricism. Aristotle. he took a left turn into empiricism. Previously, the Greek philosophers, actually, the Greek civilization was coming from the Indian civilization. That's why you have demigods both in the Roman and Greek civilizations. They were the founders of those dynasties. They were sons of an Indian king. They were spin-offs of the Vedic culture, but it just gradually became degraded. So the early Greek philosophers leading up to Socrates, they accepted the reincarnation. So many things which are Vedic were standard knowledge for them. But Aristotle took us into a whole other dimension, you see, this modern-day Western empiricism. Where now, if you hear these wonderful pastimes, the empirical brain will not accept unless I can see with my own eyes it does not exist. But these eyes are imperfect. Even from the scientific viewpoint, it is known that our senses are limited. Just like a dog, he can hear sound vibrations that we cannot hear. And there are scientific instruments to measure kinds of light that our eyes cannot see. So it's logical to understand that there are scientific instruments measuring light which is beyond our perception. There could also be, it's quite logical to understand, there could be other light out there which is not yet perceivable by those instruments. It's a logical conclusion. So, Krishna and the great acharyas, they have given us an instrument whereby we can see all of those lights, or we can see everything. That vision, you see, Shastra Chakshus, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena. By this process of pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one gets the perfect scientific instrument to perceive reality directly. One doesn't have to believe in God. One must associate with God directly. That instrument is given. This is the consciousness. Each one of us has that instrument, consciousness. We just have to learn how to activate it fully. Of this process, bhakti yoga, that consciousness becomes fully activated. So one can directly perceive that Supreme Person who is indeed the source of everything. And when one knows God, then one knows everything. So we can simply focus on reviving that dormant love for that Supreme, all-attractive Person who possesses unlimited power, unlimited beauty, unlimited renunciation, unlimited knowledge, unlimited fame, and unlimited wealth. If we can simply focus on reviving that relationship with that Supreme Person, then all our problems will be solved. No more problems. Problems finished. No more anxiety about getting old, getting sick, getting broke, getting rejected. So many anxieties we have. Oh, I may be rejected. I may become diseased. I may have to leave my body. So many anxieties we have in this material existence. May have to leave. Yeah, we think, I may have to leave my body. So we're still dreaming like that. And we'll live forever. Do you know that? There's a part of us, foolish part of us, which still thinks we're not going to die. This body will live forever. That all around me, my friends are dying, but me, no. Not going to happen to me. We don't really see the reality. I remember my wife had some emergency condition and we were visiting Denmark. She came close to leaving her body, it appeared. And it didn't seem real. It just, you know, you can't think, those things just see, it was like in a living in a dream state when it was happening. It was like a surreal state. Because we don't really think that that's a real thing, that I'm going to leave my body. And when it really, and it comes, it comes close, it's hard for us to believe that it's really happening. Because we're so much deluded by the material nature. Even though we know better, we're still deluded by the material nature. We know that we're not our body, but when I hit my foot on something, I immediately think, oh. So the difference between knowing and realizing. You see, we all know these things. But how much we have realized it, that is only to the extent that we have awakened love of God within the heart. It is only to that extent that we can realize these truths that we know by hearing from Prabhupada. The only extent that we can realize these truths is to that extent that we have awakened love of God within the heart. Therefore, there is nothing more important than reviving the dormant love of God within the heart. Nothing more important. And that love of God will be seen by how much we love God's representatives, the devotees. So this society is a wonderful opportunity to engage in loving relationships with so many devotees, you see. So how much we love the Vaishnavas, that is how much we actually love Krishna. You say, but I don't love the devotees, they're a bunch of rascals, but I love Krishna. Oh, you're a Kanishtha Adhikari, according to Shastra. Materialistic devotee. You're not really a devotee, but you're called a devotee just to encourage you to really become a devotee. Because you're not really a devotee, according to the Adi Purana, until you love the devotees. Ye me bhakta jana aparta, na me bhaktaschate janaha, mad bhaktanam che ye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. Unless you love the devotees, you're no good, according to Krishna. You're my devotee? Get out. You're the devotee, my devotee? Come in. As they say, it's not what you know, but who you know. You have to take shelter of the pure devotee. So Prabhupada has given us that facility. We can all take shelter of the pure devotee, the divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. And he's created so many devotees who are purely following him to varying degrees. And we can take shelter of them as well. The Prabhupada Nugas. So we're blessed by this wonderful society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to give us complete facility for becoming fully absorbed in Krishna Consciousness 24 hours a day. And actually entering into immortality, Prabhupada explains in an initiation lecture given in Los Angeles many years ago, that deathlessness or immortality begins from the very moment of Diksha, the very day of initiation. Provided you keep your vows you've taken, your very immortality begins the very moment you're initiated. It's not that, well, I'll become immortal when I leave beside this mortal coil at the time of death. No, immortality is achieved at the very moment of initiation for one who keeps that vow and never deviates. He achieved immortality on that day when he got initiated. On that day when the beads went into his hands, from the hands of the spiritual master, and he got his name, at that instant he achieved immortality. So that's why don't fall down. Once you take initiation, don't fall down. Whatever you do, don't fall down. Don't deviate. Because if you do, you enter back into the realm of mortality. And if you don't, you continue to live in the realm of immortality. Of course, even if you fell down, you can still pick yourself up and regain that immortal position. And it's not like the Christians, you know. You got one chance. If you don't make it, you burn in hell forever. One time I was invited to give a lecture in the heart of the Bible Belt, Norman, Oklahoma. And a class called On Death and Dying. So I explained to them the Vedic conception that, you know, you have, if you don't make it in this lifetime, you can try again. They objected. No, you only have one chance and that's it. I said, what are you talking about? Here at the University of Oklahoma, if you fail a course, is it finished? You're kicked out of the university? No, they let you take it over again. So I asked them point blank, I said, do you mean to tell me that the University of Oklahoma is more merciful than God? They couldn't say a word. Couldn't say a word. They were totally defeated. Right there on their own turf, you know. I used the University of Oklahoma as an example and they couldn't say a word. So this philosophy is like that, you know. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Therefore, if we simply follow these teachings given by Prabhupada and we describe them as they are, then we can conquer all of these Dr. Frogs and all of these atheists and all of these pseudo-religionists, and we can establish this movement as the leading educational institution on this planet. So I thank you all very much for your kind hearing. And if there's any questions, I'll try to answer them by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. In spite of my incompetencies. Multifarious incompetence. All right. So we thank you all very much for your kind attention and your kind participation in this Krishna consciousness movement. Now let's get out there and revolutionize the planet. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yatraat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Lord Ramachandra's chanting mental appearance day ki jai.